Years ago, Yellowstone's crust was still relaxing from the tectonic stress of the encounter, bleeding energy back to the surface. There was some speculation that Marco Zai, the planet's solitary moon, had even been captured from the gas giant, a history that would explain the odd cratering on one side of the moon. Yellowstone was not a hospitable place, but humans had come nonetheless. I tried to imagine what it must have been like at the height of the Belle Époque. Descending into Yellowstone's atmosphere, and knowing that beneath those golden cloud layers lay cities as fabulous as Dream, Chasm City, the mightiest of them all. The glory had lasted more than 200 years. And even in its terminal years, there had been nothing to suggest it was not capable of lasting centuries more. There'd been no decadent decline, no failure of nerve. But then the plague had come. All those hues of yellow became hues of sickness, hues of vomit and bile and infection, the world's febrile skies masking the diseased cities strewn across its surface like cankers. Still, I thought, sipping the drink Quiddenbach had bought me, it had been good while it lasted. The behemoth didn't cut its way into the atmosphere. It submerged itself, descending so slowly that there was barely any friction on its hull. The sky above stopped being pure black and began to assume faint hints of purple and then ochre. Now and then our weight fluctuated, presumably as the behemoth hit a pressure cell which it couldn't quite squeeze past, but never by more than 10 or 15%.
"It's still beautiful," he said, "don't you think?"
He was right. We could see the surface occasionally now when some chaotic squall or shift in the underlying atmospheric chemistry opened a temporary rent in the yellow cloud layers. Shimmering lakes of frozen ammonia, psychotic badlands of wind-carved geology, broken spires and mile-high arches like the half-buried bones of titanic animals. There were forms of single-celled organism down there, I knew, staining the surface in great, lustrous purple and emerald monolayers, or veining deep rock strata, but they existed in such glacial time that it was hard to think of them as living at all. Here and there were small domed outposts, but nothing one would think of as cities. Yellowstone had only a handful of settlements, even a tenth the size of Chasm City now. Nothing equaling it. Even the second largest city, Ferrisville, was a township compared to the capital. "Nice place to visit," I said, not needing to complete the old saying.
"Yes, you're probably right," Quiddenbach said. "Once I've soaked up enough of the ambience to fuel my composition and earned enough to pay for a hop out of here, I doubt very much that I will linger."
"How are you going to make money?"
"There's always work for composers. All you need to do is find some rich benefactor who fancies sponsoring a great work of art. They feel like they're achieving some small measure of immortality themselves."
"And what if they're already immortal, or post-mortal, or whatever it is they call themselves?"
"Even the post-mortal can't be certain they aren't going to die at some point, so the instinct to leave a dent on history is still strong. Besides which, there are many people in Chasm City who used to be post-mortal, but who now have to deal with the imminent prospect of death, the way some of us always have."
"My heart bleeds."
"Quite. Well, let's just say that for a good many people death is now back on the agenda in a way it hasn't been for several centuries."
"Even so, what if there aren't any rich benefactors amongst them?"
"Oh, there are. You've seen those palanquins. There are still rich people in Chasm City, even though there isn't much of what you'd call an economic infrastructure. But you can..."